calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you, exposing the con and conservative 3 hours a day, 5 days a week, 52 weeks a year, going on in our fourth year now here, the Tom Hartman radio program, syndicated by Air America Radio. Joe Lieberman, I'm no President Bush, he says, as a Texas twang begins to infect his language. The News Times of Greater Danbury, although U.S. Senator Joe Lieberman is ready to run as a third-party candidate if he loses the Democratic primary, he said it is his opponent who is harming the party. Yeah, right. Let me get this straight. Somebody who dares participate in the political process is harming the party? This is tragic. Lieberman, yesterday, he says, my loyalty to the Democratic Party goes back a lot farther than his. Ned Lamont is less about his party than himself and his point of view. Well, and the points of view of thousands of supporters. It's good. This is incredible. Lamont's campaign was quick to criticize Lieberman's party loyalty Monday after the three-term senator announced he would gather signatures to run as a petitioning candidate in November if he loses the August 8th primary. This is called trying to have your cake and eat it, too. But now the story gets even weirder. So it's time now for our activism alerts.
Gonna win, yeah, we're taking over. Come on!
Yes, indeed. If you're uncertain what to be doing today for your activist moment for the day, here's our activist suggestion for the day. Ken Salazar of Colorado, the senator from Colorado, the Democratic senator from Colorado, the DLC Democratic senator from Colorado, the so-called moderate senator from Colorado, says that he's going to support Joe Lieberman even if Lieberman loses the primary. Even if Lieberman loses the primary, Ken Salazar says he's going to support him. He is showing disdain. He's spitting in the face of the democratic process. Ken Salazar is. He and any others that do the same. They're so focused on protecting their own, on hanging on to their own power, preserving the old boy club in the Senate, preventing the public from wielding power. They're the ones. Ken Salazar, willing to sell out their party and the democratic principles this country was founded on. In a word, it's disgusting. Call Ken Salazar and let him know what you think. Let him know that you're not, even if you think he's doing the right thing, let him know that, for that matter. I mean, you know, an activist moment isn't necessarily about my particular take on activism. It's yours. But, you know, what do you think about this? Should Ken Salazar be out there saying that he will campaign for Joe Lieberman even if Joe Lieberman loses the Democratic primary? I wonder how Ken Salazar would feel if somebody ran against him in a Democratic primary and then lost and then got themselves on the ballot anyway so that they split the vote with Ken Salazar and some Republican guiding, because that in all probability is what's going to happen here. Is if Joe Lieberman is on the ballot in the fall, if Joe Lieberman loses the Democratic primary and then Ned Lamont wins, and Lieberman ends up running as an independent, you're going to have Lieberman and Lamont on the ballot, and they're going to split the Democratic vote, and the Republican is going to end up as the senator. I mean, it's the same thing that we saw in Vermont back when I lived in Vermont, where we had the Progressive Party and the Democratic Party running candidates for governor. Between the two of them, they got almost 60% of the vote. But guess what? Neither one of them got more than 50% of the vote, and we ended up with a Republican as a governor. And it'll be the same thing in the Senate. So you can call Ken Salazar's office, his direct line, 202-224-5852. 202-224-5852. His toll-free number, 888-355-3588. Actually, it's toll-free for any member of the U.S. House or Senate. That's the Capitol switchboard number. Toll free, 888-355-3588. And, of course, you're welcome to share your opinion with us and the rest of the world right here at 866-440-8466, 440-THOM. Is our telephone number. And, in fact, Victor in Marine Point, North Carolina, some thoughts on this issue. Hey, Victor, welcome to the program.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm great, but I'll get better. What's up?
I support Joe Lieberman's decision to run if he loses the primary. I don't think – I'm a Democrat, strong Democrat, support him, love him, but I don't agree with his decision, but I have to say I can't be against him because the rights of this country allow anybody to run for office, and that is part of our democracy.
Yeah, and one of the other rights of our democracy is for people like you and me to say to Joe Lieberman, sorry, we're not going to support you, and to say to Ken Salazar, forget any support from us, and to say, you know, this is suicidal. I mean, the larger point here is that we support taking back the Democratic Party by progressives, and this
and
just flies in the face of it.
But then you got to look at it. That's kind of political partisanship. I mean, why not let the guy run, let the best candidate win? If I wanted to run for office and I'm a Democrat and I'm taken away from another Democrat, but that's my right to run for office. You get what I'm saying?
I do get what you're saying, and I agree that Lieberman has the right to do it. I just think it's the wrong thing for him to do, and the reason why is because we have a two-party system in this country. We may not like it. I think probably we can agree that we don't like the idea that there's only a two-party system in this country, but we don't have proportional representation. We don't. The vast majority of democracies in the world, if you look at the Israeli democracy or the German democracy or the Italian democracy, the vast majority of the democracies in this world, you usually vote for the party. And then, so if the party gets 20% of the vote, they get 20% of the seats. If they get 30% of the vote, they get 30% of the seats. And you get a bunch of different parties, and they form coalitions, and they argue with each other. And you have real democracy going on. We don't have that in the United States. We have first-past-the-post, winner-take-all elections, which means that in any given election, if you have more than two candidates, you have a possibility that the person who wins, in fact, a probability that the person who wins is not the person supported by the majority of people. And that's not a democratic outcome. And so by Joe Lieberman participating in this, even though, yes, it's legal, yes, he has a right to, by Joe Lieberman participating in the general election, what he is doing is diminishing the probability of a true democratic outcome, small d democratic outcome. He's diminishing the probability that the will of the majority of the voters of Connecticut will be taken, because if you get Democrats supporting Lieberman voting for him and you get Democrats supporting Lamont voting for him, and say they get 60% of the vote between the two of them, but they both get, let's say, 30% of the vote, and then you get a Republican who gets 40% of the vote, guess who's going to be the senator?
Exactly.
So,
and I agree with it there, because this is a crucial year for the Democrats.
Yeah,
so
it
wouldn't
really
be
is.
Right.
It really is. And so I think we need to be saying to Joe Lieberman, hey, you know, play, you know, if you're going to join a political party, and you have, and you've committed yourself to that political party, at least play by the rules. I'll bet you, Victor, that if Joe Lieberman had a primary opponent in one of his previous elections, and to the best of my knowledge, he's never had a primary opponent. I believe he's run in all three.
Yeah,
he's pretty much
had a walk.
Yeah, I think each one of the three times he's run, he did not have a primary opponent. But if he had a primary opponent, and that primary opponent lost, and then still inserted himself into the general election, I guarantee you Joe Lieberman would have been screaming bloody murder. And
yeah, but he could see it as he's kind of being backstabbed by his own party. You could see it where he could take it that way as well.
I think he thinks he has a right of imperial entitlement. I think he doesn't give a damn about the people of Connecticut or what they have to say. He's gonna go along with his agenda. He's gonna support the war. He's gonna support the neocon agenda. And hey, if the people don't like it, well, I'm entitled to it. I just think it's wrong. Victor, I got to move along. I appreciate the call, though. Thank you very much.
All right, thanks.
1-866-440-8466, our telephone number. Hey, Mike in Port Huron, Michigan. We got about a minute before we got to take a break. Mike, what's up?
Hi, I think that Lieberman's jumping the wrong. To the wrong ship. He should run as a Republican.
I agree. I agree. If Lieberman wants to be in this race, then what he should do is he should run as a Republican. The reality is, though, I think it's too late. It's too late for him to re-register and I think the Republicans already have their primary candidates, you know, going. But Mike, good point. I mean, you make a great point. I mean, if Joe Lieberman wants to be the guy who is running against the Democrat
in the election. And of course, this may all be moot. I mean, it's entirely possible Joe Lieberman will actually win the primary. But he's already behaving as if he has lost it, which might be part of some very clever election strategy that Karl Rove is helping him out with. Who knows? But if Joe Lieberman wants to be the guy who's going to run against the Democrat, he should run as a Republican. After all, he pretty much already is one anyway. Our number, 866-440-8466, toll-free all across the United States. Drop into our live chat room. Go to TomHartmann.com and just click live chat and drop you into the live chat room. It's 16 minutes past the hour on the Tom Hartmann radio program, the pill that will help you escape the matrix.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartmann.
There ain't no relief for the commander in chief. He wants his soul to be dirt poor. There ain't no relief from all these corporate thieves as they send you sons and daughters, pollute your air and water, and send your sons and daughters off to fight on their corporate wars.
And welcome back. 21 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartmann here with you. Tom Hartmann radio program syndicated by Air America Radio. Yesterday, I was talking with Larry Scott of VAWatchdog.org, and he made the point that people with post-traumatic stress disorder, which is something that you acquire as a consequence of an extreme trauma, you know, some horrible thing that happens. In the case of our conversation, battlefield, you know, what used to be called battle fatigue or being shell-shocked, now we call it post-traumatic stress disorder, that they are being labeled as having personality disorders. Personality disorders being more broadly considered conditions that are not exogenous but are endogenous, that happen probably as a result of, for example, neurochemical or neurobiological variations or changes or whatever. Anyhow. I made the comment to Larry. I said personality disorder is a fancy way of saying this guy is nuts. And what I was trying to say was this person has a mental illness as opposed to this person has post-traumatic stress disorder and, you know, an acquired trauma. And one of our listeners took offense with my saying this guy is nuts. And you're right. You're right. It's you know, mental illness is nothing to make fun of. Speaking as a psychotherapist, maybe as somebody who is... No, I'm not going to... Temptation to make a joke there at my own expense, but I won't do that either. Anyhow, I'll just say sorry. Gary in Middletown, Connecticut. Hey, Gary, you're right at the epicenter of this whole Joe Lieberman mess. What's going on there?
Well, I mean, I wish I could be more insightful. I just, you know, for the first time in my life, I'm changing from an independent to a Democrat. And it was more to vote for Mayor DeStefano out of our city here in New Haven, so he wins his primary, who I think he'd make a great governor here. Mm-hmm. But I also, and I was going to cast the vote for Mr. Lieberman, because I really don't believe the guy he's running against is qualified, deserves the job. And I think Joe Lieberman is basically a decent guy and deserves the job. And it really has become a one issue campaign with the war. But now that he has decided that the rules don't apply to him, anything goes, it doesn't matter, he's gonna do whatever it takes because he personally feels that he is so important to the war and to American society that he's just gonna throw away all his beliefs, his past party histories to do anything it takes to win because he personally feels that he is that important to the war effort. And it kind of scares me. I don't know if there's any other certain political leaders that feel that they're that important to the war, that they cannot give up power when it comes time if they're going to lose power. So that's kind of why I won't vote for him now, just because he's put himself so above the rest of us at this point.
That's interesting. So you were a Lieberman supporter. You live in Connecticut. And now you're going to vote for Ned Lamont or just not vote in that particular primary?
I'm still going to vote for Mayor DeStefano, but I just will not cast a vote for either of them. If he loses, he loses. I mean, he should never have made that move. It was a wrong move, and it just sends a message that the rules just don't apply to him, and anything it takes to win
Yeah. It's just a disgrace. It's really a shame. He's a really good guy, and it's a shame that he's decided that he's so important to the war that he cannot be out of power. That's what it comes down to.
Yeah, interesting. Gary, thanks a lot for your perspective on that. I appreciate the call. John in Lindora, California, our number 1-866-440-8466. Hey, John, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Your last caller there, this is the problem I have with the Lieberman people. They sit there and say this guy's a good guy where really his true colors have come out at this time. I mean, the other day he was saying, oh, I love the Democratic Party. They've been so good to me. Yet when he's not going to get his way, he's going to sidestep and say, okay, I'm going to go my route, screw the party. It's my way or the highway. And I really think that's very selfish. And if he did care about America and his district, he would do what's right.
And just say, okay, whoever wins the primary wins the primary.
Right, and back that, you know, if he didn't win, then he should back the guy in the Democratic Party that won, because...
John, you're calling from Lindora, California. Your two senators are Boxer and Feinstein.
Yes.
Do you know where either one of them stands with regard to supporting Joe Lieberman if he loses the primary?
I don't at this time. Feinstein I'm not real hip on. There's a lot of issues I have with her that I'm not going to be voting for her this year. And she's actually my senator.
Is she up for re-election this year, Feinstein?
I don't know if she is or not.
Yeah, because the senators are every 6 years, so I can keep track of who's, you know, in the House of Representatives. Everybody in the House of Representatives runs every 2 years, but the senators are every 6 years, so it's always staggered. In every state, you have 1 year where there's no senator for election, and then, you know, 1 year where one, and then 2 years later, one of them's up, and then 2 years later, another is up, and then you're back to a year where it's neither one. I frankly don't know if Boxer or Feinstein are up for re-election this year or not.
I don't believe they are. I think you're right. But, yeah. I mean, I'm just so frustrated. I was a Republican until this year, and I changed. I had voted Republican for probably 15 years.
Why?
But I just don't believe in what they... Since I lost my job at a utility company, it was a union company, and when NAFTA went through, deregulation went through, and I lost my job after 5 years.
And that's why you became a Democrat.
Exactly.
Yeah. A Democrat is an unemployed Republican. Good one. John, thanks a lot for the call.
Thank you.
Good to hear from you. 27 minutes past the hour at the Tom Hartman radio program. Truth and common sense in broadcasting for a change.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
The latest news has struck me funny. It's all about greed, boys, and it's all about money. Well, this great nation is in distress. I've got to get something off of my chest. November's coming and it won't be long. When you cast your vote, please don't vote wrong. Vote away those blues, Republican blues.
There you go. 34 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. You're in the middle of the vast radical middle conspiracy, my friends. Take no imitation. Our program syndicated by Air America Radio. Welcome back to the program. This is all about, ultimately, not just Joe Lieberman. This is about the enablers in the Democratic Party. Ken Salazar, the Democratic senator from Colorado, has come out in the Rocky Mountain News today. He has come out and announced that even if Joe Lieberman loses the Democratic primary, he will support Lieberman's candidacy. In the meantime, Hillary Clinton has come out and said if Lieberman loses the primary, she will not support his candidacy. Now, I'm on Hillary's side on this, and I think that Salazar is selling out his party. And I think that all of us should be calling our senators and saying, if Lieberman doesn't win the primary in Connecticut, are you going to campaign for him or are you going to campaign for Ned Lamont if Ned Lamont wins the primary? If Ned Lamont wins the primary, will you campaign for him? That's the question that needs to be put to every Democratic senator in the United States, because we need to find out who are the guys who are really going to be there for the party. Who are the guys who are men and women who are really going to stand up for other Democrats versus who are the senators who are just, you know, part of the old boy club? And they just view it as, yeah, this is the Senate, this is our club. You got to get and you've got to call Ken Salazar as well and let him know, hey, this is no way to behave, Senator Salazar. The toll-free number for Congress for the Senate, 888-355-3588. And ask for Ken Salazar's office and just say, are you kidding? You're not going to support the Democratic nominee of the Democratic Party in Connecticut? What? 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number. Paul in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Paul, you have some information on a few other Democrats?
Yes. I just read in FireDogLake.com, an excellent political analyst site, and they said that Barbara Boxer and Joe Biden have said they're going to come to Connecticut and campaign for Lieberman in the primary.
Right. Now, that's a whole different thing from campaigning for him after the primary.
After the primary. Yes, I'm wondering, though, if Lamont wins, are they then going to come and campaign for Lamont against Lieberman, or are they just going to back out? Like, it's sort of a strange situation where they might not, in effect, you know, do anything to help the Democratic nominee in the general election.
Right. This is the insiders in the party standing up for their own. Really, I think what we're seeing right now with Biden and Boxer coming into the state, if that in fact actually is what's happening in the primary, which they're perfectly entitled to do, is Joe Lieberman pulling in some old chits. You know, he's got some chips out there, and he's saying, hey, you owe me some favors, and they're coming in to pay back the favors. And, you know, that's politics. But if he loses the primary and Ned Lamont wins, good question, what will Boxer and Biden do? Well, and, you know, we need to be asking our Democratic senators, what are you going to do? Who are you going to stand up for? Paul, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. John in Seattle, Washington. Hey, John.
Oh, hi, Tom. I was calling about two-party system.
Right.
I believe there's actually three. The old Democrats or progressives, the old Republicans, and the fascists made up of the Republicans that are running right now.
The new Republicans.
New Republicans.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. I don't disagree with you. There's a few of the old Republicans left. Lincoln Chafee, Olympia Snowe, George Voinovich, Susan Collins. But the vast majority of them are people that the vast majority of the Republicans now. I mean, you've got Lindsey Graham out here saying that, the Supreme Court has ruled that George W. Bush is guilty of war crimes. We should just pass a law and say we're going to ignore international treaties.
Yeah.
I mean, say what?
Yeah.
Say what? I mean, this is incredible. One of the folks in the chat room, by the way, tells me that Senator Feinstein is up for re-election this November, is not being challenged, but David had looked into that, and I thought he had said that she's not running. So I don't know with regard to Feinstein, back to that. But.
Out here in Washington, Mark Wilson is challenging Cantwell, and she seems to line up more with the DLC than the progressives. And
yeah.
Mark is a very progressive person.
Yeah, in fact, we've had Mark on this program, although we've had Maria Cantwell on this program as well.
Yeah.
And you know, I wish them both well. I hope they have a great primary, debate, battle, whatever, election, and whoever is the nominee of the party. I think it's very important, particularly right now, when we're talking about control of the House and the Senate, that everybody support, even if we don't like, you know, their votes on the bankruptcy bill or CAFTA or whatever.
Yeah.
We have to, at this point in time, we have to transcend the individual issues.
Yeah, I plan on voting for whoever the Democrat is that survives the primary.
Yeah, yeah, and not
that's
just
be.
Yeah, not just vote for them, but work for them. You know.
I mean, I'll be probably supporting the the Republican over there in the 8th District, who's Darcy is her first name.
Yeah.
I also wanted to make a comment on a positive thing.
Mm-hmm.
This 4th of July, I walked with the Snow Anti-War Coalition in a parade in Burien, just south of Seattle, and we were clapped all the way.
That's marvelous.
The whole length of the deal, people were clapping for us.
Well, this is the point that I keep making. You know, we are not the left wing here. The left is dead. The left were the old communists and socialists. And, you know, between J. Edgar Hoover and the collapse of the Soviet Union, the communists and socialists are gone. What What we represent is America, the traditional values of this country of tolerance and community and a government that is progressive and useful and helpful, and then there's these right wing extremists who have taken over and in some regards they've even taken over the Democratic Party because you've got folks like Joe Lieberman in there.
Yeah, I agree totally with you,
John. Thanks a lot.
We talk about you in the parades and in things like the function and the junction for anti-war. You and the other people there, America, are people that we talk about.
Well, that's great. Thank you very much, John, and thanks for listening to us there on Talk 1090 in Seattle.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it. Julian in Grand Rapids, Michigan, listening on WTKG. Hey, Julian, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. I had heard previously that the reason Lieberman had decided to run in a third party in case he loses the primary is that he was confident that many Republicans would cross over and vote for him, and that he would still be a sure winner. I didn't know if that was true, and if you've heard anything about that or not.
Well, it may well be the case, and there is a certain amount of logic to it. I find it really hard to believe that Lieberman would come out and say that. So yeah. I doubt that anybody has ever actually quoted Lieberman as saying that. But
no, he didn't say it. Someone else said it about him.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah, but see, this is a very, very risky calculus because there's going if there are enough Democrats to elect Ned Lamont in the primary to be the nominee of the party, that means that Lieberman's going to lose a lot of Democratic votes. I'm guessing that the Republicans who would vote for him probably have voted for him in the past. And, you know, because, you know, people, there's a lot of crossover voting in the United States. We tend, as a people, Americans tend more often than not to vote for the person rather than the party. So my concern is that Lieberman is going to split the ticket three ways, and we're going to end up with a Republican, another Republican in the Senate, which would be a very destructive thing for this country, number one. And number two, that we've got other Democrats who are enabling this. You know, Ken Salazar coming out saying he's going to support Lieberman even if he loses the primary. I mean, what kind of weird message is that? Ken Salazar should be thrown out of the Democratic Party right now. I mean, you should just say enough of this. So anyway, I appreciate hearing from you, Julian. Thanks for the call. Will in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Hey, Will, what's on your mind today?
Good morning, Tom. The rumor has it that McCain has cut a deal with But W want, in order for W to support McCain, he wants Jeb Bush as his VP. Have you heard anything about this?
No.
Rather than GQ. This July issue.
That's McCain has cut a deal with W that Jeb will be his running mate?
Yeah, that would be his...
Doesn't surprise me. You know, Jeb was the guy that the Bush family had been grooming all along.
Man, that's in there. It's on page 104. I wouldn't throw this at you.
Yeah.
And I'm stunned.
Yeah, well, I'm not surprised, frankly.
I was, because you know more than I do.
But you got to read Kitty Kelly's book, The Family. You read that book, and you'll get it.
About the Bush family?
It's about the Bush family, yeah. That's the Bush dynasty is really more
important. Someone brought it up to you about how long they've been pumping oil out of Arabia. I think Prescott was in the 30s already?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Tom, yesterday, and this is, I missed it. I couldn't hear it. Didn't get the gist of it. William Casey you were referring to?
Yes.
And the same, you're paralleling that with Lay?
Well, I was asking the question, you know, did Ken Lay die or was he taken out? And it was semi-rhetorical. I mean, you know, it's just that the last time that there was somebody who knew something about a Bush, and that was Bill Casey. He was the campaign manager for the Bush Senior's campaign. He was being called before the Senate to testify, and the day of his testimony, he suddenly had a seizure, and he was the head of the CIA at the time, and this was about, you know, whether or not Reagan and Bush stole the election in 1980, and he had a seizure. He was taken off, and they opened up his brain and took out the part that allowed him to speak, so they cut his tongue out. 45 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
When you're strange, faces come out of the rain. When you're strange,
I tell you, Ken Salazar's strange. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here, exposing the con and conservative on Air America Radio. I just called Senator Ron Wyden's office. He's my senator, the Democrat from Oregon, and asked the guy who answered the phone, has Senator Wyden come out and said whether he will support the Democratic nominee in Connecticut, regardless of who it is, or will he support Joe Lieberman, even if Ned Lamont beats him in the primary? And the guy who answered the phone said, I don't know, but I'll connect you with his press secretary. And so he connected me with a voicemail, and I left a message and gave my phone number and said, call me back. So, you know, I'm curious if any of you have been successful in getting through to your Democratic senators what those senators have said about whether or not they're going to support the Democratic Party. In the meantime, Bill in Phoenix, Arizona. Bill, you want to tell me that there is such a thing as a left in the United States?
Well, I'll just try and make it as short as I can here. Basically, the reason the Democratic Party and all your listeners, I'm a Republican. I try and, you know, I just got serious. Hey, I'm listening to your show. I'm listening to, trying to, you know, check out every program to get some. So long story short is, I listened to your last caller about, or you said that the old Democratic Party is out.
No, I said the left is dead. The left used to be the communists and the socialists, and nobody,
okay.
You know, and they were very active, actually, in the United States in the 1920s and 30s and 40s.
Okay, then do me a favor. Define the socialist. Define what your interpretation of socialist.
Sure. You can find it in the dictionary. The socialists believe, and this is how Karl Marx defined the word, they believe that the state, the government, should control the means of manufacturing and distribution. In other words, all businesses should be owned by the government. And,
okay.
You know, that was what the communists were advocating in the United States in the 20s and 30s and 40s. I know that my grandfather was a socialist. I mean, I can tell you this. And it didn't work. You know, they tried it in the Soviet Union. It didn't work. And the communists and the socialists, that's the old left, they're gone. And so what you have are the vast majority of Americans who pretty much would agree with Eisenhower on most issues, who are now called Democrats. And they're not the left, they're the center. They're the vast mainstream of America. The vast majority of Americans want a clean environment. They want, you know, strong social security, things like that. And then you've got these extreme right-wing cranks who say, oh, no, we don't, you know, we should privatize everything.
Okay, well, real quick here then, how come last year over 70 out of 100 out of all the bills that were passed, 73% of the bills that were passed were more government items passed by Democratic parties, as far more government to help the people, help more welfare programs, more food programs. What do you call that?
Well, first of all, I'm not sure I understand what you're saying. And the Republicans control the House and Senate.
That's why the Democratic Party.
The Republicans control the House and Senate, Bill. What's your point about?
You guys will never.
Hang on, just a second. Are you talking
more
Bill,
programs?
You
too many spending programs. And that's why you guys won't win. Believe me, I'm pissed at Bush. I think all government now is crooked.
Bill, let me just ask you, you know, let's not try and shout each other down here. Just a simple question. Do you realize that when Bill Clinton was president, the size of government shrank by about 300,000 employees, and that when Ronald Reagan was president, the size of government increased faster, at a faster rate, and larger than it ever had in the history of the United States, and under George W. Bush, it has again increased larger and faster than it ever has under the history of the United States, and that the Republicans control the House and Senate? It sounds to me like you're complaining about Republicans, not Democrats.
Again, you know, some of it's true, some of it's not, some of it's you're kind of...
What I just said, you can look up in the dictionary.
That's like... Well, again, that's like saying, you know, you're just kind of feeding it your way to, because, again, it's your station, it's your, you know, and so you're just kind of...
Well,
you know,
give me a fact to counter what I just said. I mean, under the Democrats, the government gets smaller. Under the Republicans, it gets bigger. It sounds to me like you got a problem with the Republican Party.
Unfortunately, I believe the other way. And I've seen, you know, if you go to gov.com, it shows the other way. Who do you believe anymore? There's so many damn... polls on who's again, the government in general is so damn crooked, it's a joke. Whether you're it used to be where if you're a Democrat and you wanted to get something passed, and if it was the right thing to do, a Republican would, you know, you're right. Even though we don't agree on certain, but you're right. It's the right thing to do. And vice versa. You don't get that anymore. It's, you know, like, you listen to Rush.
I agree with you, Bill. I agree with you, and I mourn that.
That guy's the biggest hatred spewer that I've ever seen. And then you're on the opposite. You also push it the other way. All the Republicans are bad. All the Democrats are bad. Well, when are we going to get someone in the middle that just says, hey, and bring everybody together and make a better government instead of just, you know, that's how bad our society's gotten. And, again, I think Rush Limbaugh, he's a joke. But I think you're the other end of the spectrum.
Well, I'm sorry you think that. I am agreeing with you entirely that we used to have a time in this – there was a time in this country when Republicans and Democrats had worked together. And it has vanished. And it vanished in large part during the presidency of Ronald Reagan, in large part because of Lee Atwater. Lee Atwater with his philosophy of the perpetual campaign and that winning is the only thing that matters. And in my opinion, he corrupted the Republican Party very, very badly. And the Republican Party is not the Republican Party that I worked with in 1964 when I went door-to-door for Barry Goldwater. The Republican Party has become something very sick and twisted. And a good chunk of the Democratic Party has as well.
Okay, I'm going to start calling you Rush now. Now you're just blaming the Republican Party and... It's both parties. It's out of hand. It's a joke. Someone needs to come up and say, and I realize you're agreeing with me and I'm repeating myself, but I'm just telling you, that's the reason why the Democrats will not win. Because,
well, I think that's the reason why the Republicans aren't going to win, Bill. But we'll see how it shakes out. And I think it's the reason why the Republicans haven't won. I think it's, you know, but that's a whole other issue about stolen elections. Bill, I appreciate the call, though. It's always good to hear from our conservative brethren. 57 minutes past the hour is the Tom Hartman radio program, Truth in Broadcasting for a Change. Stick around. We'll be back after the news at the top of the hour.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Covers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back to the program. Tom Hartman here with you. It's, David, our producer here, having a bit of a concern here. I think he's getting whacked by the flu. So, we'll see how it plays out. But the question is it the bird flu? Could it be? Could it be ghost chickens coming to get him?
Ghost chickens in the sky.
Ah, yes, there you go. ghost chickens coming to get you, David. Look out. Anyhow, welcome back to our... Sorry, couldn't resist. Welcome back to the program. 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number. I want to get into this whole issue of illegal immigration and illegal employers that I wrote about yesterday on commondreams.org. But first, we've got a few folks who want to finish up our conversation from the previous hour. Paula in Carbondale, Illinois, listening on WINI. Paula, you want to correct me in my definition of socialism?
I did. I've got my Webster right here. I want to read it to you.
Thank you.
The theory or system of the ownership and operation of the means of production and distribution by society or the community rather than by private individuals, with all members of society or the community sharing in the work and the products. In other words, not owned by the government, but owned by the people themselves. So that's a big difference from what they had in Russia. Saying that what they had in Russia was socialism is really a right-wing kind of thing to say. I know it's very common in this society, but socialism's never really been tried, so you can't say it failed.
Well, actually, communism has been tried, and it does work. It's been tried on the kibbutz in Israel. It's been tried in tribal societies for 100,000
well,
years.
Yeah, you,
it
yeah,
works in small
true.
Communities where everybody can hold everybody accountable. But if you go back to your textbook dictionary, your dictionary definition there, Paula,
uh-huh.
you see that it says the means of production distribution is owned by society, right?
By the community.
By
right.
the community.
Rather
now,
than private individual.
What is the institution that we as the community establish to do our business?
Are you talking about the consent of the governed, as we're supposed to have here?
That's right.
Well, it isn't working out here too well either, is
no,
it?
No, I understand. But my point is that the definition that you just read is that, yes, the means of production and distribution, that is business, would be owned by the workers, essentially. But
right.
that the means by which the workers administer that is called government. And that was the point that I was making. It's that the government owns the means of supply and distribution. Now, the big difference is that in the Soviet Union, for example, and all of the, quote, communist states out there, end quote, the government has become an it. It's not a, you know, see, that definition to work as a true socialist definition requires the government to be a truly democratic government. Then you have democratic socialism, and you have something that's a little closer to, you know, what you have in Sweden, for example, that actually does work. But, you know, my sense of it is that anytime you get beyond a few hundred people in a community, it's going to start breaking down. Although there is an old friend of mine, Jeff Gates, has written a couple of books about this. I think one's called The Ownership Solution, where he suggests that businesses, that the stockholders of businesses, the ability is to hold, and I'm probably mangling Jeff's position here, but this is my understanding of it, that the ability or right to own stock in a corporation is limited by being a worker in that corporation. So a business is always owned by its own employees and not owned by, you see, that would be the end of capitalism, in other words, but it would be the continuation of free enterprise. And I think that's a fascinating concept. Again, I haven't seen it successfully played out anywhere. There are some worker-owned businesses in the United States, some that are doing very well, but they're few and far between.
Well, we've got to do something.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. We need to take back our democracy, starting as point one. Paula, thank you for the call. We were having a parallel discussion on the definition of socialism in the chat room, and I appreciate your helping clarify that.
Okay.
Good to hear from you. Thank you.
Thanks. Bye.
Gary in Seattle, Washington. I'm listening to Talk 1090 in Seattle. Hey, Gary, what's on your mind?
Oh, hi, Tom. I wanted to respond to that conservative guy.
Yeah.
I think his whole discussion there, comparing you to Rush Limbaugh, is just so goofy. That's the result of Gingrichism and Atwater, that tactic of attacking your opponent rather than discussing policy. If you say, oh, such and such is a slime bag, then you don't have to talk about, well, what would he do if he were in office?
Yeah.
And that has poisoned the well of American politics in just a terrible way. And we're going to, I don't know how we're going to fight our way out of it, because people, those right-wing types, they say...
You realize you're doing it right now, Gary.
What's that?
You realize you're doing it right now.
I know it.
Those right-wing types, they...
they are, that's what I mean. And Rove, did you see Rove's essay in Time? Did you see that? Check it out. In the July 3rd Time, where he has an essay of what Teddy Roosevelt teaches us about democracy.
Karl Rove?
Yes. It is the most amazing display of hypocrisy I've ever seen. Oh, it's one of the points is we need mass participation, as if they weren't trying to disenfranchise.
Show up for one of Bush's speeches sometime.
And
you off to the free speech zone.
Another one of his points was politics can be fun. I wonder if he had fun when he was smearing McCain in South Carolina.
Well, I think he did.
And Swift quoting John Kerry. You should read it. It's July 3rd Time.
Yeah, I think that Karl Rove has a personality disorder, and I'll use that word in the very precise meaning of the word. Causes him to think these things are fun, yeah.
Tom, check out that essay, and you can do a point-by-point rebuttal. He is just like dead meat. It's amazing.
Yeah, I'll do it. Gary, thanks for the tip.
Okay.
Appreciate it. Good to hear from you.
Bye.
Bye now. Elise, is it Elise, or am I pronouncing that right, in Atlanta, Georgia?
It's Elise.
Elise. Hey, Elise. Welcome to the program.
Hi. I just wanted to remind everybody that even Lee Atwater recognized that what he had done was wrong, because
yes.
he apologized to Michael Dukakis and Jesse Jackson in person before
he
died.
On his deathbed. On his deathbed, he did, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was dying of brain cancer.
I just wanted to remind everybody that he had done that, and so even he knew what he had done was wrong.
Yep, and he also spoke to future politicians. He said in his apology, he said, please don't do what I did, you know, and please ask others not to do what I did. And yet, you know.
No, I wish they'd listen to him.
Yeah, I agree with you. Thanks
Thank
a lot,
you.
Elise. Great to hear from you. Larry, and is it LaConnor, Washington?
Yeah. Tom, hi. I wanted to comment on your last caller.
Sure.
Yeah, this is, I'm originally a white Southern male. I recognize this attitude very well. You know, United States' complaint isn't really about the social programs that that he attributes to the Democrats. It's that they weren't designed to help him.
Mm.
You know,
you mean that some poor black people, for example, might be getting some help somewhere?
Well, you know, as a white, you know, Southern male, I can tell you that, you know, they've been on the business end of every group claiming the victim status as a political strategy, at least since, you know, the Civil Rights Act of 64.
Right. And the major recipient of most government largesse, by the way. You know, us white males. It's
absolutely. But of course,
starting out with deductions for businesses, starting out with the home mortgage deduction. I mean, there's a long list of welfare programs for.
I understand this, Tom. Yeah. The point being is that now, for 47 years now, that they've been on the business end of it. All the bad guys are white males, no question about it, but most of the white males aren't bad guys. And now they're claiming victim status.
Yeah.
Everyone claims victim status. Everyone's a victim. Yeah. So what comes next? I cannot get the answer to that.
This is where I think it's so important that we start actually talking about the issues. We actually start putting things in a historical context, and we start offering solutions. We start suggesting, you know, there are things that can be done, positive things that can be done to move this country forward, to move this world forward, and to frankly save this world. I mean, you know, we need to do something about global warming. We have the means to do that. We have the technology to do that in a way that will be incredibly beneficial to our economy. We could have a solar energy boom that would make the dot-com boom look like nothing. You know, we need to strengthen our social safety net so fewer people fall through it. We need to make college education free for all so that we increase social mobility. These are all things that will greatly strengthen our society.
Well, we understand all this, Tom. That's true. I mean, with this caller you just had, you know, unless he's included, you know, unless he feels like he's going to vote for a Bush.
Yeah, we just have to make sure that he realizes that he's getting his piece of the pie, too.
Until he figures that he is. I mean, you want to try to understand who are these people that voted for Bush. It doesn't matter whether he stole election or not. Almost half the country that voted for Bush anyway. It was close.
Yeah, so anyway, we're back to Thomas Frank's question. What's the matter with Texas? Larry, thanks a lot for the call. Good point, and you made it well. By the way, we have a comment line. If you'd like to, if you don't want to go on the air, but you want to leave a few comments with us, remember your thoughts and opinions may make it on the air, so make it count. Less than 30 seconds. 503-323-6620 is our comment line. 16 minutes past the hour. I'm Tom Hartman.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Everybody's got the clarion. Some people got to pay more. Well, you can tell the people anything. Spoofy them anything you like. It used to be so simple. It used to be my life.
It's Funding America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. Tom Hartman here with you, 21 minutes past the hour, 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number. Robert in Redondo Beach, California. Hey, Robert, what's on your mind today?
Well, I wanted to say that of all the talk shows I've listened to, you're the most reasoned and balanced host.
Well, I hope that's a compliment. Thank you.
That is a high compliment. The issue that I wanted to raise is a very big issue, which is also very important, which doesn't seem to be getting a lot of attention, and that is the population increase we've experienced in this country, and I'll put a baseline of 1980. We've gone from 240 million to 300 million.
Right.
And I think the implications of that are rather far-reaching. So it seems to be the focus of the federal government to fuel economic growth through population growth. And
not just our government, by the way. The Russian government, for example, right now is paying a bounty to mothers to have children.
Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't catch that.
I said it's not just our government that's doing that. The Russian government, for example, right now has an aggressive program that they're advertising on Russian television, paying a bounty to women to have children.
Right. Well, in the short term, it seems to make sense to kind of balance out the demographics of the young versus the people in the workforce versus the people who are not contributing. But it's not a policy that that really works. It's not sustainable either. And the point is to get off this mentality of growth and move to sustainability, which doesn't seem to be the focus right now.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree with you, Robert. And in fact, if you go back and you look at the history of Europe from, say, the 7th century forward, you discover that it was the Renaissance came about right after the Black Death, after the Black Plague, when the population of Europe decreased by about 30%, by about a third. Then the generations after that, because there was such a contraction in the labor supply, labor became so valuable because there was such a need for labor. The price of labor went up, and that produced the first middle class, which produced a small leisure class of people who were able to engage in arts and sciences, and boom, you had the Renaissance. And so those folks who say that the highest value is an ever-increasing population, you know, are just ignorant of the lessons of history, frankly.
Well, it's a fantasy, and also we're never going to get a handle on energy independence or having a stable amount of energy.
Yeah.
And we need our excessive needs in this country with the growing population. We're going to outstrip our gains through population growth.
Yeah, you're right, and of course I'm not advocating another plague. I mean, it would be the last thing that we would need, but I do think that rational population policies are an important thing. Thanks a lot.
I wanted to add one last thing.
Sure.
And that is, a couple years ago, I heard an official from the Centers for Disease Control being interviewed on I think NPR, and he said that since the inception of the CDC in about 1946-47. They have been very successful in their mandate as far as dealing with diseases and so on, human misery around the world. The problem is that during that period of time, the last 60 years, the world population has doubled.
Right.
So they really haven't solved the problem overall because there was no balancing policy on the part of governments to deal with the increase in population.
Yeah, I think, you know, most people don't get it. They're in 1800, we hit the first 1 billion people in the history of the world. We hit 1 billion people. When at the time of Christ, there was a quarter billion people, around 250 million. We had the year 1000, we had a half a billion, 500 million. The year 1800, the first 1 billion. It took, 170,000 years of human history to produce 1 billion people. The second billion took only 130 years, 1930. The third billion took only 30 years, 1960. In 1960, when Kennedy was inaugurated, there were half as many people on the planet as there are today. The fourth billion didn't even take 30 years. It took 17 years, 14 years, 74. The fifth billion, 1987, that would have been 13 years. And the sixth billion, 1999, 11 or 12 years. And, I mean, it's just this exponential explosion, and it's producing a whole lot of stresses on the planet and a lot of problems. Robert, I got to move along, but good
job. All right, thank you very
much. Thanks for the call. 1-866-440-8466, John in Wayland, Michigan. Hey, John, got about a half a minute here before we've got to take a break. Is it quick?
Yes, sir. Republican Representative Pete Hoekstra announced on one of our big channels here about WMDs found, and I heard a little clip on Hannity last night where he interviewed him about finding the WMD shells. See, they were there.
Oh yeah, they're still flogging that thing. We've known about those from the get-go. Those were old dead shells that were unusable, that still had some chemical weapons in them that were pre-1991. I mean, the UN knew about that. This is It's tragic that they are trying to continue the big lie program here, but what do you expect from Fox News?
Yeah, yeah, I guess so.
John, thanks a lot for the call, and from Pete Hoekstra, for that matter. There are a few Republicans out there who are sufficiently toxic to try and pull that stuff off, and he's certainly one of them. 27 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Program, the pill that will help you escape the matrix. We'll be right back.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Welcome back. 34 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Our program brought to you today by Small Dog Electronics, 1-800-511-MAX, 1-800-511-MACS, for all things iPod, Macintosh, and computer, for that matter. Right here on the radio support group of, by, and for we, the people of the United States of America. Want to get into this immigration issue here, and we will in just a moment. First, David in DeCoin, Illinois. Hey, David.
How you doing, Tom?
I'm great. Did I pronounce your city right?
DeCoin?
Yeah. Okay, great.
Yes, that's correct.
What's up?
I wanted to call you last week, and I had to go. I'm sorry about that. But just driving in today for lunch, I heard another caller right at the top of the hour expressing the same issue basically to you that I was wanting to express last week. Tom, we like you. You're obviously a bright guy, and you know what you're talking about. But the concern that I have is that, you know, we need all bright guys on deck. We need all hands on deck. The country's in crisis mode here. And my specific area of concern is that you're responding to problems that are really nonpartisan problems in a partisan way. And maybe that's because of your association with Air America. I don't know. It's no dispersion upon Air America, but I see them as the counterweight or the counterpart to the partisan right media of Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, and that sort of thing. It's this party warfare that's going on here. It's really not. It's addressing the problems in a partisan way, not in a nonpartisan way. And because of that, we're not getting to the root of the problem. One example that I would point out is the immigration issue that you're getting ready to talk about. Democrats, in general, the Democratic Party in general, is all for guest worker programs and open borders and that sort of thing. They really are, because if the Republicans and the Democrats, if both parties were not wanted that, if they both wanted that border shut down, Tom, they could do it today. You know that they could. They could come out, make a very strong statement. We are going to start prosecuting the employers to the fullest extent of the law. If we don't have the
And that's all it would take, David. That's all it would take.
That's all it would take. And if we don't, and they'll say, well, we don't have the procedures, and they don't know how to identify these people as.
No, that's nonsense. AMC Theaters is doing it right now. You just and in fact, you know, in. Being an employer myself for the better part of the last 30 years, you have to submit your employee's social security numbers when you deduct taxes. And it doesn't take a rocket scientist to find out from the Social Security office whether it's a legitimate Social Security number or not.
Right, and whether there might be duplicate numbers out there. So
they will tell you.
We have processes that we can begin right now.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, and that's the rant I'm going to go off on. But back to this thing about Air America Radio. Let me just, you know, for the record, nobody at Air America Radio syndicates this program. I also do a morning program for 3 hours before I do this program. I do 6 hours of talk radio a day. I do a morning program on KPOJ, which is the 25,000-watt Clear Channel station in Portland, Oregon. And there, my paycheck comes from Clear Channel, which is owned by a family which is the second, I believe, the second largest lifetime patron of George W. Bush. And I got to tell you, nobody at Air America has ever told me what to say on the air, and nobody at Clear Channel has ever told me what to say on the air.
You know, and they don't have to. The way in which
a host or a media personality approaches the issues and frames the issues is enough if it fits with their...
Well, what you're hearing, David, is you're hearing my opinion pure and simple. I mean, I own my own show, and regardless of who syndicates
that.
Them. And the reason why I think that there is a legitimate partisan argument to be made is because we have a political system in this country which was imperfectly put together by our founders. James Madison struggled with this thing. I mean, he's the father of the American Constitution and a distant relative of mine, I might add. And you read Federalist Number 10. He was freaked out about this. The fact that these guys, this was the first time that they had ever put together, setting aside the Iroquois Confederacy, which they borrowed heavily from, but it was the first time European historic civilization, whatever you want to call it, people from Europe had ever put together a constitutionally limited democratic republic that involved the people having the power rather than the government. It had always in the past been kingdoms, theocracies, or feudal lords who owned the power, who had the rights, and the people only had privileges. And they flipped that upside down, and they said, no, the people are going to have the rights, and all institutions, whether they be corporate, religious, or even government, will have only privileges. And the struggle, what they were trying to figure out was, how can we do this so that the majority, within the constraints of a republic, protecting the rights of the minorities, that the will of the majority will be done. And they came up with this first-past-the-post, winner-take-all electoral system, and they knew it wasn't perfect. And Madison in Federalist Number 10 begs people not to form political parties, because they knew that if you had more than two political parties, you would have undemocratic results from elections. You would have situations where a person who didn't have a majority of the voters behind them gets elected. And that the only solution that they could come up with in 1787, when Madison was and Alexander Hamilton were writing the Federalist Papers, was to beg people not to form parties. And 3 years later, Madison's right there with Jefferson and the Democratic Republican Party.
Well, can I suggest something here, just to put a bug in your ear so you can be thinking about it. What we need now is not parties so much as we need principles. And the principles, if you're in a position to where you can gain information or agreement on this from just like the guy that called in before the top of the hour, expressing his frustration with the fact that both parties are the same. I'm frustrated with that as well. We need to be focusing on solutions that are going to implement principles that we all agree on regardless of who we are and what our economic status is.
I agree with you, David, but those principles will have to be put into place. They'll have to happen in the real world as the result of political partisan activity.
Well, that's
why I'm saying the only thing that we can do is we can get together and take over one of the two parties, and the Republican Party has already been taken over by the corporatists and the Dominionists, and the Democratic Party is available.
There is another approach to that, and I won't take your time now. I'll call back in some other time and address that issue right there.
Well, the other approach that's real simple is instant runoff voting.
I'm sorry?
If we had instant runoff voting in the United States, like they confronted the same problem. See, it was in 1861 when John Stuart Mill came along and proposed proportional representation, where 30% of the party gets if 30% of the people vote for a party, then 30% of the seats go to that party. And that's how most democracies around the world work. And that's fairly democratic. And you can have 10, 15, 20 different political parties. No problem. But with the winner-take-all, first-past-the-post kind of election like we have in the United States, they also have that in New Zealand and in Australia. And the way that they solve that problem in those two countries is with instant runoff voting, where say, for example, in the 2000 race, I voted for what's his name, Ralph Nader. I actually did. But my second choice would have been Al Gore. So if we had instant runoff voting, I would have voted for Ralph Nader, and then I would have, as my second choice, put Al Gore. So then when they do the count, they say, okay, we take out everybody who didn't, nobody got 50%, so we take out the lowest level, the person who got the least number of votes. So that would have been Ralph Nader. They pulled out Nader, and they say, and we'll take everybody who voted for him, their second choice. And so my vote then would have become an Al Gore vote. And that's how instant runoff voting works. It's been put into place in over 300 communities across the United States, mostly by the Green Party. San Francisco is the largest city in the United States that uses instant runoff voting. And it makes the system more democratic. And that's something that we all need to be working toward. But I'm telling you, until progressives take back the Democratic Party, which is opposing instant runoff voting. Until those of us who believe in this kind of stuff take back the Democratic Party, we're not going to be able to do it, because political parties are the institutions of power in this country.
Well, we need to take back both parties. And
I agree.
It's a little bit more difficult than what we can explain today, because I've already taken too much of your time.
Okay, well, give me a call back when you want to discuss it again, David. I'll talk about it anytime you want.
I sure will.
Okay,
thanks,
good to hear from you. I appreciate it. 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number. Kate in Arcata, California. Hey, Kate.
Hi, Tom. First of all, I want to give you, if you don't already have it, a great person who's running for the Senate from Maryland, David Dickerson.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a fantastic website. He's a progressive Democrat, and his email address is DickersonForSenate, all one word, all one thing, .com, DickersonForSenate.com.
Great. David
and
is writing
really,
that down as you speak.
Yeah, please do find out about him, interview him, et cetera, and people
we'll,
can
we'll do it.
Money.
And, Kate, we've got about a half a minute left before we got to take a break. What you wanted to make a point.
Yes, the point I wanted to make was that I keep thinking of Thomas Jefferson and have faith in the people when we're talking about Lieberman. Mm-hmm. People of Connecticut, as long as they get accurate information and a fair election, I think it's really important to really – if they vote for Lieberman, that really reveals the state of the Democratic Party. It's more conservative than we'd like to think, so the work is cut out for us. I think they have the ability, if we reframe the whole problem here with Lieberman, they do have the ability to make the right choices. And I think it's really important to keep stressing having faith in the people.
Yeah, well, I don't disagree with you that we should have faith in the people. And when I lived in Vermont, two-thirds of the people in that state voted for a progressive or a progressive Democrat for governor, and we ended up with a conservative Republican as governor. Because of the nature of our electoral system, and I'm just afraid that that's going to happen in Connecticut, and it's going to affect all of us. Kate, thanks for the call, though. 45 minutes past the hour.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Mission accomplished, horns blare. Mission accomplished, hot air. It went without a flaw, the shock filled them with awe. The evil do is done, like burgers on a bun. Mission accomplished, God bless. Mission accomplished.
Yeah, welcome back, my friends. It's the True People's Radio, the Tom Hartman Radio Program, syndicated by Air America Radio, 1-866-440-8466. Our telephone number right now, however, our senior missing Kenley body correspondent, Victoria Jones, on the line from the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com in Washington, D.C. Hey, Victoria.
Well, hey, yes, of course, this is one of the many rumors.
Kenley's body is missing?
Well, the New York Post, of course, is front page headline is suggesting people should check the coffin to make sure that it's there. That's one of the many rumors. The other rumor, of course, is that, as you know, that he was bumped off. The other rumor is that he...
Well, I started that one.
Right. You certainly have been instrumental in the bumped off one. The other one is that he's not dead at all, but that he's been given money to go off and live a comfortable life elsewhere, presumably in some South American country,
yeah,
where he, like, wouldn't be recognized.
Yeah, see, I just thought, you know, I remember what happened to William Casey, and you know, who had the goods on Bush Sr.
I was so shocked when he told me that they cut out the part of his brain that impacted his speech. Terrified.
I'm terrified now.
I drive past Bethesda Naval Hospital all the time, and I feel like I'm driving past an instrument of horror now.
Yeah, it's really spooky. Well, they said he was having seizures in Broca's region, and that it's the temporal, you know, the right or left temporal lobe of the brain. I forget which. I think it's the must be the left temporal lobe, controls the right side of the body, and had to take it out.
Well, as you know, one of my questions yesterday at the White House was about Kenley and condolences from the president, and I made the point that Kenley was the president's friend, and Tony Snow said that no, he was just an acquaintance.
Right.
The progress report from thinkprogress.org has done a nice follow-up on that.
Although they refer to you as the reporter rather than as Victoria Jones from the Talk Radio News Service, our friend.
They do, and that it could be that some reporters might prefer it that way.
Yeah, well, perhaps, but
some reporters might.
I thought they should have given you a plug. In any case, I interrupted you in mid-sentence.
No, it's all right. I'm just making the point that some reporters might prefer it that way.
I see.
Yes, they might. Anyway, so
some reporters like the missing Ken Lay body correspondent reporters.
Right, that's the kind of reporter who might prefer it that way.
Oh, I see. Okay,
yeah.
All right.
So the reporter said that the president was Ken Lay's friend. He says, no, the president has described Ken Lay as an acquaintance, and I'm sure you've already seen this. And then they give us a quote from a letter from Governor Bush to Ken Lay that says, one of the sad things about old friends is that they seem to be getting older, just like you. Laura and I value our friendship with you, your younger friend, George W. Bush.
Right.
That's three friends in about two lines.
And Tony Snow says...
Well, I didn't have access to that particular letter at today's briefing.
Because I could just see Tony Snow going, ibbity, 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 that's all, folks. You know, it's a,
I think so.
A variation on the theme.
I think so. So the missing body is one of the theories. My other correspondent's title today is the career correspondence. Two Ks, of course, career and correspondent, both with a K.
Okay.
Because that really is the only issue that's being talked about in Washington, D.C. Career. That's the only thing anybody's talking about is career. Whether they're going to launch another missile, what does it mean?
Korea.
Korea.
I'm sorry, I thought you said career. Yeah,
oh, yeah. Well,
what is North Korea?
North Korea. So, this is what people are talking about.
What's George Bush going to do? I mean, he said last week, if they launch this missile, it's unacceptable. Then they launch the missile. Then they launch another one. Then they launch another one. They launch seven of them. It's like they're going like that, and Bush is sitting there going, what's he going to do?
Tony Snow confirmed in the press briefing that just happened that they were all unacceptable.
And therefore... But he's going to hire somebody to throw a pie in Kim Jong-il's face?
There's no therefore. They were all unacceptable. That's as far as it goes. And the diplomatic route is the route we have to go. The six-party talks, the allies will be united. We will speak with one voice.
You know, when Bill Clinton was president and Kim Jong-il started talking about nuclear power and nuclear bombs and we're going to do all this stuff, Clinton got Madeleine Albright over there and they sat down and they talked and the Koreans agreed to put a plug in it. You know, I mean, they shut down the reactor. They shut down their programs. They put cameras in them. They were observed 24/7 by international monitoring teams. They allowed inspectors in, the whole nine yards. And that was going on when Bush became president. And then all of a sudden, David Gerson, is that his name, the speechwriter?
Gergen.
Not him. The new one, the one who just resigned.
Oh, I don't know his name very well.
The guy who's part of the Dominionist movement, the uber Christian. Anyhow, he's Bush's speechwriter. He comes up with a brilliant idea of, let's use the phrase the axis of evil. And, you know, 2 days before Bush gives the speech, this guy invents this phrase, throws it into his speech. Bush comes out, you got to have more than one country for an axis. You got to have at least two or three. So they throw North Korea in there. And now Kim Jong-il is going, what? I'm the axis of evil? Well, I guess I'll bets are off. And so then Bush says, well, and not only that, we're not going to talk to you. I mean, this has got to be the most screwed up piece of diplomatic mess that has ever happened.
I don't think anyone could say it better than that.
Okay, and the Bush administration, I mean, what are they going to do about it? Apparently nothing. I mean,
diplomacy, which we were told is not like a 30-minute sitcom. It doesn't just end and everything's happy in the end. It goes on.
Yeah. Well, it's truly a tragedy for the world that the Bush administration won't just sit down with this guy and talk. And it's particularly a tragedy for the people of North Korea, because if we could create some kind of an opening into that country, we might be able to alleviate the suffering of the people of North Korea. I mean, it's a really terrifying place.
2 million people starved to death, I believe.
Yeah, it's a human tragedy. That we're doing nothing about. We're just making it worse. Victoria Jones, TalkRadioNews.com. Thank you, Victoria, for being with us today. Great talking with you. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, where our talking points come from Jefferson and Madison, not some right-wing think tank or the RNC or the Daily Memo from Roger Ailes. Nope, not here. We'll be back after the news, my friends. Stick around.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. 6 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Our quote for the day from Woodrow Wilson. Liberty has never come from the government. Liberty has always come from the subjects of the government. The history of liberty is the history of resistance. Interesting. Woodrow Wilson, wasn't always all that in favor of people who resisted governmental power, shall we say. The Democratic president who ran World War I for us. John Gideon is with us. He's with VotersUnite.org. Hey, John.
Hi, Tom. How you doing?
Just great. Great to have you with us. VotersUnite.org, the website. Also, you're the information manager for VoteTrustUSA.org, another great website.
Yep.
John, I'm looking on your website here. It looks like you said the train wreck continues. A lot going on here in the realm of electronic voting and vote fraud and whatnot. First of all, any kind of update on the Busby Bilray thing?
I believe right now, the people down there are trying to raise the funds. They're talking about going out and trying to either challenge or get a recount. And in conjunction or separate from that, Lowell Finley's group, Voter Action, has filed an injunction trying to get a temporary restraining order, I believe it is, to stop the use of the Diebold TSX machines. Because it wasn't just San Diego County that had sleepovers, but probably every county in the state that is still using, I think it's 8 counties now, that are still using those machines.
Now, when we speak of sleepovers, John Gideon, explain to our listeners what you're talking about.
Yep, thank you. Sleepover essentially is where the county election officials actually give the machines to poll workers, so the poll workers can take them home, and it's done anywhere from 3 weeks to a day before the election. But they actually go home with the poll workers, and the poll workers store them in their garages or put them in the rumpus room or leave them in the back of their cars, whatever.
Or sit them in their computer room and pull the memory card out and pop it into their PCM CIA slot and take a look at it.
There is that possibility.
Because these memory cards are just PCM CIA cards, aren't they?
Yes. And the problem with this is that because of the Hursti hacks and the information found by Bev Harris and Black Box Voting in Utah, they found out that, in fact, the machines were very vulnerable to potential attack and that there needed to be some standards for security on the machines. The NASED, National Association of State Elections Directors, the people who presently have oversight over certification and decertification on a federal level of voting systems, put out a statement and said that if certain security steps were not taken to ensure the security of the voting machines would no longer considered to be certified as far as NASA is concerned. And the state of California requires federal certification. So if the county violated those federal standards, then in theory, the state could no longer consider them to be federally certified, and therefore they would have to decertify them, and therefore counties used decertified voting machines.
So the primary election in California and other primaries that are being held with these kind of machines are of only a questionable legality. John Gideon, I'd like to, with VotersUnite.org and VoteTrustUSA.org, I'd like to step back one giant step here. Whose idea was it? When did this thing start of turning our vote, which, you know, when I was a kid was always run by local government officials, people answerable to we the people. It was, you know, local election officials, local bureaucrats, I mean, you know, and overseen by the political parties, but always run by government. Whose bright idea was it, and when did it happen that somebody came along and said, let's privatize the vote? Let's put the vote in the hands of private, for-profit corporations. Who started this? When?
These companies have been out there. ES&S is an old company. Sequoia Voting Systems, that's now owned by Venezuelan nationals, has been around for over 100 years. Diebold has certainly been out there, although they just they're kind of new in the election business.
But when did we start saying to a company that makes ATM machines, in the case of Diebold, for example? Or ES&S, you know, the company was the company that it used to be. I guess Chuck Hagel was the CEO of it.
Right.
That company came into being, as I recall, in the 70s or 80s. At what point in time, on whose watch, at what point in time did the government, did somebody in government say, okay, let's start privatizing the vote. Let's start handing the vote. I mean, we did have voting machines. The 1964 election, Barry Goldwater, Lyndon Johnson election, that was the first election in which manual voting machines were used, physical voting machines, as far as I can tell. But those machines were actually owned by the local communities. They bought them from the vendors, so they owned them. And you could, you know, pop the door open in the back and see the little gears. I mean, the software was transparent. At what point did somebody in government say, let's go with non-transparent machines that aren't even necessarily owned by the government? Certainly the software in them isn't, and it's not transparent anymore. Who made the decision to privatize our vote?
Well, I think that everything came as a result of the 2000 election and what happened in Florida, and certainly some people in Congress saw an opportunity to, with probably nudging from the outside influences, i.e. the industry, the vendors, they saw an opportunity to make things happen, to do what you're saying.
Yeah, but when Chuck Hagel was the president of what is now ES&S, he sold his voting machines to the state of Nebraska, and then he stepped down and ran for Senate. This obscure guy who used to work for George Bush Sr. for 20 years in Washington, D.C., didn't even have much of a claim to being a Nebraskan, and he ran for the Senate and didn't tell people that he used to run the voting machine company. He called himself an investment banker or something like that. They ran for the Senate, and the Washington Post said it was the election upset victory of the year, that he won districts that had never gone Republican before, African-American districts, other minority districts. You know, it was just mind-boggling that he won, and that was like in the early 90s. That was, what, 90, 92, 94, 96? It was one of those years. So this has been going on for a little bit longer than since 2000.
Well, that's true, but I don't think that really the big push until they saw that they had, that the door was open because of what happened in Florida. And I think even that was to a large extent manufactured.
Sure.
You're
talking about the Help America Vote Act.
Support this. Yeah, right. And it required then the Help America Vote Act, and things kind of went from there. You know, different people, the backers of the Help, sponsors of the Help America Vote Act, had their different agendas that they were able to put into it.
Yeah. John, we only have about a minute left. I am hearing from sources inside the Republican Party that if Republicans lose control of the House or Senate, that they are going to challenge individual close races around the country by claiming that electronic voting machines have been hacked by Democrats. And they're going to try and do like Dino Rossi did up in Washington State. They're just going to yell, vote fraud, vote fraud, vote fraud, over and over and over again to try and throw the election into question. A, why haven't Democrats done this up to this point? And B, you know, what are the prospects for this happening?
What this is something that actually that Brad Friedman and I have been talking about. And yeah, I think that it's a definite situation. It is why one reason that we voting activists have to continue to be as nonpartisan as possible. As far as why the Democrats haven't done it, it sure beats me. It sure seems to me like everybody has been beating on the DNC and all their other commissions and committees and everything else, trying to get them to listen to us, and we're being ignored.
Yeah, and now even Bill Clinton has come out and said he read Bobby Kennedy's article in Rolling Stone, and holy cow, you know. But it's like, what is it going to take to wake these folks up?
Well, it's going to take court cases, and that's what everybody's working on.
Yeah, and I know Bobby Kennedy's going to be filing those. John Gideon, you can read all about it over at votersunite.org and votetrustusa.org. John, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you, Tom.
Good talking with you. 16 minutes past the hour.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Hey, I'm taking my car. Son, you ain't been doing her right. Well, I've been watching you and I don't like. You've been treating my stars and stripes. Got too many fancy friends for me. The Saudis treat you like you're royalty. I run. Now I'm taking my country back. Now I can understand why you were hot, 'cause Bin Laden never did get caught. So you said we had Saddam to blame, tried to tell us it was all the same. But now the years roll by and our kids keep dying. You don't even have a plan to bring them home. Those WMD you promised on TV, admit it, you figured it wrong. So I'm taking my country.
So it's time to take our country back, my friends. We asked Congressman Bernie Sanders some time back, what do we do? How do we take back the country? He says, find individual candidates whose positions you support. Forget about sending money to parties and things. Just get out there, find good candidates, put them on the air, let people check them out and support them if they believe in what they're doing. Today, Kevin Zeese is with us. He's running for the United States Senate out of Maryland. His website, Kevin Zeese, KevinZeese.com. Hey, Kevin, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Tom. Good to talk to you.
Good talking with you too, Kevin. I see also ZeeseForSenate.org is another website.
Goes to the same place. You actually have one other unusual website, which is a wiki campaign site where people can come together to help form policy and self-organize. We're trying to make it a campaign of the people to get to a government of the people. So that one is Zeese.us. So
Zeese.us.
Yeah.
Okay. Kevin Zeese, last time you and I talked, Kevin, you were, as I recall, managing or running or participating in some way Ralph Nader's campaign in 2004, and you and I were on the opposite end of an argument.
I can't believe we could disagree, Tom.
Yeah, well, so anyhow,
I'm sure we agree on virtually every issue, but yeah, we had a disagreement on whether to support the pro-war Kerry or to support the anti-war Nader.
Yeah, well, that was the disagreement that we had, and we need not revisit that. I don't think we'd be productive right now. Yeah. Are you running, Kevin, as an independent in this race, or are you running as a Green?
Well, it's interesting. I've gotten a nomination of three parties, the Green Party, the Libertarian Party, which is the first time those two parties have ever united behind one candidate, and the Populist Party, which divide over the Greens over the Nader-Cobb choice. So those three parties have put aside their differences to support me. And when I started my campaign, Maryland law would have allowed me to have three-party nominations. But on the last weekend of the legislative session, the Democratic-controlled legislature passed emergency legislation, which does not require the governor's signature, and it's designed to be for the health and safety of Marylanders. They passed emergency legislation to require you can only be nominated by the party that you're registered with. So I can only have one nomination on the ballot, but I do have three nominations, and I'm calling it a Unity Campaign for Change.
There you go. So Kevin Zeese, who is the current senator from Maryland that you are campaigning to replace?
Paul Sarbanes is retiring, and the likely contenders are Michael Steele, who is a lieutenant governor, a conservative African-American who supports President Bush on the war, the Patriot Act, who's had all the Bush family in to raise his campaign war chest.
He's a Republican
being coached by Karl Rove. The Democrat most likely is Ben Cardin, at least that's the one that the Democratic Party wants to have. Ben Cardin is a nine-term congressman who has been voting for the occupation, voting against any exit strategy, has voted for the Patriot Act, very much in support of these corporate trade agreements that have been pushed around the world, very much pro-Israel, refuses to criticize Israel no matter what they do. And the likely potential challenge for him in the primary is Kwesi Mfume. The Washington Post had a poll that actually showed him leading, which was surprising. But
Mfume.
Yeah, but if you look at the poll, it's very skewed with more African-American people polled than will be in the actual vote. But Cardin has more money.
Particularly if the Republicans have anything to say about it, right?
That's right.
Yeah. So Kevin Zeese, what are the issues? We just have a couple minutes here. What are the issues that you are representing, on which you're running?
I'm opposed to the Iraq War. I run a national anti-war group called Democracy Rising. I'm opposed to bombing Iran. No Democrat will take that position. I'm opposed to our current policy toward Israel-Palestine. No Democrat will take that position. I also favor restoring our civil liberties, protecting worker rights, a living wage. I favor a single-payer national health care plan. No other candidates advocating that position. I favor facing up to the wealth divide, which has resulted in a skewing of our economy toward the wealthy. My tax plan is $100,000 of your first income, federal income tax free. That costs the Treasury $380 billion. That's made up for by a modified Tobin tax, which is a tax, a tiny tax, a micro tax, 0.1%, 0.1% on the purchase of stocks, bonds, derivatives, and currency, which would raise $1.2 trillion, three times as much as taxing the first $100,000 income. And I raise that issue because it really helps to explain to people how skewed our economy's gotten, how the money is not a bell curve where the money's in the middle where most people are. It's an L curve where most of the money is on the in the wealthy
on the
category.
Far end. Yeah, and you balance the budget in short order. Kevin Zeese, running for the United States Senate out of Maryland. His website's kevinzeese.com, Z-E-E-S-E, or zeeseforsenate.org, or zeese.us. Kevin, thanks for being with us
today. Thanks a lot, Tom.
Good luck on your campaign. 27 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Don't bring me down. No, 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 no. I tell you what's up before I get up the phone. Don't bring me down.
And welcome back. 34 minutes past the hour. The radio support group of, by, and for We the People of the United States of America, the Tom Hartman radio program syndicated by Air America Radio. Charlie in Freeport, Pennsylvania on the line. Hey, Charlie, what's on your mind today?
Oh, God, Tom, I just couldn't let this go past today with a couple of them guys on there blasting you and calling you a lush gumbo. My God. And you let them get away with that. I have never yet found you not to be factual. You know, if we got facts, call me partisan. But if you got the facts, and that's you got the facts.
Well, thank you, Charlie. I appreciate your defense of me. The first guy who called, I just figured it was obvious to everybody. He said, I just got my Sirius satellite radio, and I'm just tuning around. I just heard your show. And, the guy had heard like 30 minutes of the show, and he comes on and starts telling me I'm just like Limbaugh. And I just didn't take the bait because I figured I'm considering the source. The guy's listened to 30 minutes of the show. And then the second guy who called and said the same thing, he says something like, you Democrats all, want amnesty and open borders and stuff and on immigration. He's obviously never heard my rap on immigration. So I just figured, these guys are not regular listeners to the show. And people like yourself, Charlie, who are, know that, they're full of beans.
Oh, God. Yeah. I'm upset since then. I was hanging on there, and then the facts that,
I appreciate your defense.
If they don't see it on TV, it's my facts or something. I don't know how we're going to save this democracy. I don't know who said that phrase that time long years ago that you can't sustain a democracy without education.
Yeah.
And
Thomas
like
Jefferson
saying,
actually talked about that at some length, which is why he started the University of Virginia and why he wanted on his tombstone not that he was president of the United States, but that he founded the University of Virginia.
Oh, I mean, God, you can turn on Lush Gumbel. I cannot stomach a guy more than 5-10 minutes, and I can find more if it ain't pure propaganda or pure stuff that nobody challenges him on.
Yeah.
And a lot of it's outright lies. I mean, he knows better. He can't be that ignorant.
No, I know. And they do it with, you know, a combination of smoke and mirrors and very, very, very carefully screened calls. And ironically enough, the flip side of that is anytime conservatives call this program, I actually put them at the front of the line. I mean, I like arguing with people. I guess I'm contrary by nature.
Well, the thing of it is, it doesn't matter where they come from. If you have the facts, it's good to get together. It's good to argue the thing out. And as long as you got the facts, I'll listen to anybody.
Yep, there you go. Charlie, thanks a lot for the call.
One other thing, if I could,
yes.
I don't want to hold you up.
That's
but
good.
The people come on here and they keep taking them Republican frames that liberal media. I got so sick of that, I feel like vomiting.
Yeah.
You get on there, I have yet to find NBC, CBS, ABC, every one of them in this last election, I don't know about 2001, every one of them endorsed Bush for president. Every one of them.
Yeah.
And 98.8, the last time I looked, of all media, is owned by the Republican multinational corporations.
Yeah.
And my God, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do, Charlie, and point made. Thank you very much for the call and for making it. You're very articulate, and I appreciate your concern and your outrage. And speaking of concern and outrage, I've been talking all day about, I'm going to get to this, well, I'm going to get to it right now. I want to talk about immigration, because this is the issue that the Republicans are going to sneak up and clobber, beat the Democrats over the head with in the weeks just before the election in November. And I'm telling you, the Democratic Party does not see this thing coming. And the Republicans are just fixing to whack them upside the head. And the Democrats should take a look at Francine Busby, at that race in San Diego, and see how this is going to be played. I mean, Busby handed them, you know, a goodie on a silver platter when she made the comment that you don't have to have papers to work on her campaign or to help her campaign. And the Republicans took it out of context and made it sound like she was encouraging illegal immigrants to vote. But the fact of the matter is that this is a huge issue, and most Americans are frankly quite concerned about the fact that the middle class is evaporating. They're not exactly sure why, but they know that something that has to do with illegal immigration has something to do with it. The fact of the matter is that the middle class is evaporating for three primary reasons. The first is an unremitting, unrelenting war on organized labor that was declared by Ronald Reagan in 1981 when he busted the Patco Union and has not stopped. It has just been going full tilt boogie for 30 years. Well, 25, 26 years. So number one, the beginning of the when Reagan came into office, 25% of America had working America had union jobs. Today it's 7% of our private workforce. Number two are these international trade agreements, and this you can lay at the feet of Bush Sr. and Bill Clinton. Although Reagan was pushing for this thing, Republicans had been pushing for this all the way back to Nixon. But Clinton was the guy who finally pushed it through and signed the agreements, NAFTA, CAFTA, the whole bit. And they're creating the World Trade Organization. And what they did was they said, we're going to take down the tariffs that protect our domestic industries and have protected them literally since 1787. We took those apart in the late 1990s and said, hey, the world is flat now. And multinational corporations were free to export their jobs outside the United States. And then number three, the third piece of this thing, of the dismantling and dismemberment of the middle class in the United States, is those jobs that they couldn't export overseas, you know, like construction. You can't say, okay, build the house in China and ship it back over here and we'll seat it on the foundation. Can't do that. Those jobs that they couldn't ship overseas, they said to illegal immigrants, they said to people who historically had been coming into the United States illegally, but nobody was all that upset about it because they were doing mostly agricultural work. And I'm not endorsing this. I mean, the farm workers union, Cesar Chavez, was very upset about it. He and Walter Mondale marched down to the Mexican border in protest of this. But by and large, Americans, in quote, you know, this was not a political issue. the fact that about 1 million people a year would come into the United States from, you know, across the Mexican border, not all from Mexico, but across the Mexican border. They would work during the harvest season, make some money, and then go back home. 1 million people came up and 1 million people went down every year. And what started in 86 when Reagan did push through his amnesty thing for illegals in the United States was that he basically with a wink and a nod started saying to employers, oh, and by the way, if you want to hire people who are not citizens of the United States, we're not going to hassle you. We're not going to prosecute you. And so what we have now is a situation where you have some, who knows the numbers, but probably 10, 12 million people in this country illegally working. And the consequence of that is that it dilutes the labor force. The consequence of diluting the labor force is it drives down wages. So, first of all, keep in mind, this is only one of a three-part war on the middle class by the conservatives. But most importantly, number two, it is not an illegal immigration problem that we have. The problem that we have is an illegal employer problem. And this is how the Democrats have to reframe this if they don't want to get beat up. As long as the Democrats keep talking about amnesty and let's have guest workers and all this kind of stuff, you know, going along with George W. Bush on this, they are slitting their throats politically. Because Americans get it that, you know, when the labor market has more workers, more willing workers in it than there are jobs, the cost of labor drops. You have huge swaths of America where there's large quantities of unemployment. You know, look, I was just in Michigan last weekend, and you drive through Detroit, you drive through Flint, and there's just, you know, mile after mile of homes of literally unemployed people, people who used to work in the auto industry before GM and Ford moved all their, not all of them, but moved so many of their factories down to Mexico, sort of offshoring their manufacturing. And There are literally, you know, I mean, there's in the neighborhood of 10 million unemployed or underemployed people in the United States. And if all the illegal immigrants were not working in the United States, then jobs would open up. But the problem from the point of view of employers is that not only would those jobs open up, but they'd have to pay a little more. Because citizens are not going to work for the very, very low wages that illegals will work for. So what we have here in the United States is an illegal employer problem. But that's not how it's being played in the media. In the media, it's being played. Well, here, this is a clip from Fox News yesterday. Sheriff Joe Arpaio, I believe is how his name is pronounced, of Maricopa County, this is Phoenix area, on Fox News last night.
By the way, I have 1,000 illegals in a jail out of 10,000, including 2,000 we have in attempts.
Now, he's not pointing out that any of these, by the way, are the illegal employers.
So yesterday I started a new program. Everyone will have to listen to the national anthem and God Bless America. We did it 4 times yesterday, but every day from now on, in the morning and night, they will listen to the patriotic songs.
So listening to patriotic songs, and we're dressing them a special way.
We put them in pink underwear and striped uniforms and pink handcuffs.
So this, you know, talk about humiliating. This is when the racism comes out. This is when, I'm telling you, this is an issue that brings out the worst in people, tragically. And the Republicans are really good at exploiting issues that bring out the worst in people. Remember the Willie Horton ads when Bush Sr. was running against Michael Dukakis? And you know, it was all Willie Horton all day. Willie Horton, hey, Willie Horton's going to get you. Michael Dukakis morphing into Willie Horton's face on the screen, on the TV screen, all that kind of stuff. Well, this time around, it's going to be whoever the Democratic candidate is and whatever the local race is. And at the presidential level, the same thing. Oh, that person's an illegal alien or a supporter of them. But the problem is not illegal aliens. The problem is illegal employers. If employers in the United States just did what AMC Theaters does, just check Social Security numbers, it would solve the problem. You don't need a fence. You don't need deportations. You don't need... And it'd solve the problem. 45 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Yes, let's impeach the president. There you go. Welcome back, my friends. 10 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman with you. Many Republicans looking for any silver lining in an abundance of dark clouds think the immigration issue might be a silver bullet that will slay their current vulnerabilities. So writes George Will, the Republican operative George Will, in an op-ed in the Washington Post. He says the issue is, as political people say, a twofer. Opposition to the Senate bill and support for the House bill puts Republican candidates where most of the country and most of the party's base is, approximately fix the border, then we can talk about other things. And opposition to the Senate bill distances them from a president who, although rebounding recently, has approval ratings below 40% in 29 states. Jeff in Sacramento, California, listening on KSAC, Talk City there. Hey, Jeff, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
Good.
Yeah, I think that your issue framing the immigration as being an employee issue is kind of wrong. And
I'm saying it's an employer issue.
Employer issue right. is wrong and very deceitful.
Why?
Well, you're the one that says that they earn about $4 a day in Mexico. Now, who's going to go back to Mexico for $4 a day?
Well, first of all, I'm not the one who said that. But the point is that if you don't have a job here at all, $4 a day is a whole lot better than nothing.
They won't go back. They'll stay here and take.
But they did go back for 100 years, Jeff. For 100 years, people came into the United States.
Yes,
about a million people a year came into the United States, worked seasonally, and then went back to Mexico.
Yes.
When we started offering them permanent jobs, they started staying permanently.
No, but they went back and forth because they could come back and forth. And now they can't come back and forth, so they're going to stay here. They're going to take the welfare.
No, any Mexican citizen can leave the United States for Mexico. Just walk down to the border and say, hi, I'm a Mexican citizen. Let me cross the border.
But they can't come back. That's the problem.
Right, and why would they want to come back if there's no job here waiting for them?
Okay, but they wouldn't want to leave if all they have to do is, all they have to look forward to is $4 a day in Mexico. They'll stay here and take advantage of all the benefits that California gives them.
Jeff, I'm sorry. It ain't going to happen. It's just when people don't have jobs, they don't stick around. I mean, it's really that simple. Crescencio in Sacramento?
Hello.
Hey.
Yes. Tom?
Yes, you're on the air.
Oh, yeah. I was listening to that. I heard the Jeff. But anyway, your deal about the side of the Americans, you know, what this country should do to help this, stop this illegal immigration. Well, here in Sacramento, are you there?
Yeah.
Here in Sacramento, our newspaper ran an article about Mexico and the recount on the election.
Yeah.
And I always heard that the right wing was involved in trying to get the PAN reelected.
Yep.
And there's an article here where this person by the name, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing his name correctly. His name is Armand Peschard, and I don't know the other part, Sever Up or something.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I'm pronouncing it correctly. But anyway, he's an expert at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. This is a right-wing think tank.
Yep.
They call themselves Center Right now.
Yep.
But I don't know, everybody knows that these think tanks are financed by the right-wingers.
Right. What's your point, Crescencio?
But anyway, his point is that he was in Mexico to observe the election. I don't think he's there to observe. I think they are involved in this article.
Oh, cool. They're down there helping him out.
Yeah,
absolutely. The Republican Party is down there funding the right-wing parties, helping. Yeah, absolutely. And in fact, Greg Palast, we had him on yesterday. He says they're helping steal the election. I appreciate the call. Bob in Burlington, Vermont. Hey, Bob, you're live and on the air. What's up?
I go back to the business of the surprise that the California woman got. I think that one of the aspects that the left doesn't work up as well when we talk about the embarrassment of Clinton and Bush 1 with the free trade agreement stuff is, not only has it undermined our ability to compete sort of internationally, but it's really broken down our defense structure. In 1941, within 1 week, 14 shipyards that we don't have anymore were making ships to fight
right.
the war.
Right.
GM was converting plants that now are in Brazil and Canada to, you know, military hardware. I mean, we're at a point now where we're going to have to nationalize the Hyundai factory in Tennessee.
That's right. We can't build a missile right now without parts from China. China,
exactly.
A country that has threatened to nuclear bomb 100 of our cities if we try to thwart their will with regard to Taiwan. We can't build a missile right now without chips from China.
Well, and steel. I mean, look where steel has gone.
Yeah, our trade policies are absolutely insane. You're absolutely right, Bob. Bob, I got to move along. We just have a minute left. Terry in Fort Myers, Florida. Terry, you got the last minute. What's up?
Hey, the piece that you just put on there about the middle class,
yeah.
That was as concise and as well articulated as I've ever heard in my life, and I was wondering if you could put that in your email, in an email out to your list, because I'm on that list.
I did yesterday. If you're on the list, you got it yesterday. And if not, you can go to tomhartman.com and click Articles on Democracy, and it's the very top piece. It's called Reclaiming the Issues, It's an Illegal Employer Problem.
It starts out by
saying, you know, there's this three-pronged war on the middle class, and, you know, the other two prongs we'll deal with in other issues, but then this one talks about.
I received that.
Yeah, so you got
anyway,
it.
I just want to say real quick that, you know, I've listened to a lot of different people, but your stuff is great.
Well, thanks, Terry. Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it, and thanks for listening. It's 56 minutes past the hour, wrapping up the show here. The Tom Hartman Radio Program. We will be back tomorrow. It's going to be a great day. Bernie Sanders is going to be with us. Don't forget, democracy is a participatory sport. Democracy depends on you. It starts with you. Activism starts with you. Get out there and get active, my friends. Tag, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow. Have a great afternoon.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.